Welcome back to A Virtual View. Today, I'm joined by Bryce Ray Nelson, the director of Crossroads with the Indiana Rural Health Association. Bryce, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we've needed to do this for a while.
Yes, but that's all right. It finally came together, so I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So for those of our audience who, unlike me, don't know you, could you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Bryce Ray Nelson, and I have been with the Indiana Rural Health Association now for going on 6 years. I originally started as a program coordinator for the Indiana Rural Schools Clinic Network, which put telehealth technology into 37 different schools around the state of Indiana. And since then, have become the program director for the Crossroads Partnership for Telehealth, which focuses on telestroke in our rural hospitals.
So it's really interesting that you did start out with a telehealth program and then have moved into another digital health focused program. So coming into IRHA, was that a focus for you? Did you want to start with the telehealth program, or was it just serendipitous?
Yeah, you know, it was, I think that's a good word for it. It was serendipitous because I had just finished my master's in public health at IUPUI, and just a few months later had the opportunity to join the IRHA team. And, you know, it was just that kind of situation where, well, we have an opening for this program. You know, would you like to kind of explore that? And before that, I had really not had a whole lot of interaction on the telehealth side of things. Everything that we had really been trained for and anything I had had experience with was clinically based. I had spent some time working as a medical scribe, and so I was very well aware of the, you know, the challenges of the day-to-day and in the clinic and in the hospital and everything, but this was a different side of things for me. And so I was very excited to kind of, you know, I guess, stretch in that manner and try to grow in that way. And so I've really enjoyed it. It's been very interesting. Of course, we know COVID hit and telehealth became huge. You know, I think that was the true test of, well, how much do I know about telehealth? How comfortable am I with this? And IRHA has done a fantastic job in giving us the opportunities to train on that and understand that better. So it's been great. I've enjoyed it.
No, that's really cool. And I'm sure coming in with more of a clinical perspective and more of the experience on that more acute care side has given you a unique sort of viewpoint when it comes to telehealth. Because when most people think of it, they think, okay, I'm going to go sit at my computer and have like a Zoom appointment with a doctor, whereas you saw it from more of that clinical in-hospital setting, which is interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me a little bit more about the Crossroads program.
So the Crossroads program, it's a grant-funded program through HRSA, the Office for the Advancement of Telehealth, and we wrote for this program in 2020. So right in the middle of the pandemic, we were like, hey, here's an opportunity. Let's pull our writing team together and see what happens. And we were very excited when we got it, and then we realized we were going to have to build and launch a program in the middle of a pandemic, which I personally do not recommend that. You know, just a little bit challenging, a little stressful sometimes.
Just a bit.
But, you know, just a tiny bit. But you know what? We have some amazing partners. And I mean, you know just as well as I do that when it comes to our rural and our critical access hospitals, you know, there's always something going on. Many people wear 3 to 4 different hats and hold a number of positions. And they do such a fantastic job at keeping things running smoothly for their patients, for their community. And so in the midst of that, you know, throw a pandemic on top of that and then throw a new program into the mix. And, you know, we were like, we don't want to overstretch anybody, but they have done a fantastic job, even in the midst of all of the craziness, high patient census, low staff census. They have been incredible, and they have done nothing but continue to just bring patients in and give them access to this telestroke care that's provided through Crossroads.
No, that's so cool to hear about working with those critical access hospitals and those local partners, because I truly think that a program can't get off the ground in a field like ours unless you do have that engagement and that buy-in from those local partners.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, that's something I learned very early on when I was still working with the Rural School Clinic Network, because this was put into elementary, middle, and high schools throughout the state, right? And so we had to work with the community, work with the community leaders, and then kind of trickle down through school administration all the way to parents and guardians, and really get that buy-in and that trust from the community and go in there knowing that, we're trying to do a good thing, but we want to make sure they know that what we're trying to do is going to be nothing but good and just bring an opportunity for healthcare expansion and access. And so it's very similar in this case. The demographic of patients is a little bit different, of course, because we deal with strokes with this program, but it's still the same. You have to get the buy-in from the community, and it's been very well received, and we've been very fortunate, very blessed to have that buy-in.
Right. And you need a couple of, we call them telehealth champions, in a system, because a lot of time this is taking something that people have not worked with before, and it's forcing them to change what they're doing in an already, like you observed before, a very packed schedule. And it requires somebody or multiple somebodies usually who are really passionate and dedicated to the vision and the opportunity that telehealth can bring.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. They are champions. I 100% believe that because this is in addition to everything that they do. And it was just, fantastic that they were able to pick this up so quickly and that they continue to do such a great job with this. Of course, with any federally awarded grant, we have deliverables and reports that we have to fill out. And so, of course, there's additional responsibilities on the hospital side as well. In addition to providing that care, then they are sending data our way, and then we kind of abstract that and we kind of pull it together for reporting and everything. And so, yeah, I 100% believe they are champions and they're fantastic partners to work with.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the mechanics of the program? What exactly are the services that you're providing?
So when we talk about the mechanics of the Crossroads program, a lot of times we will just quickly throw out there telestroke because we want to just get the idea across really quickly what it is we mainly do. And in all reality, this is a teleneurology program where we do have the ability for people to also be seen, if they are there for seizure, suspected seizure. But the main point of this program is to look for people that are having signs of stroke. And so they have the option to use that for other neurological conditions and consultations, but we focus on the stroke portion because that's what we wrote for, that's what we collect data for. And so when it comes to the specific mechanics, a patient will present to the emergency room and will more often than not be there because they have either weakness or facial droop or different signs of stroke. And so from there, then the attending provider will of course either do a stroke alert or code stroke and send the patient off to imaging. At that time, a lot of times the nurse, the telehealth champion, and of course that looks different at every facility, right? There's a similar workflow, but responsibilities and positions can be held by different people. So they will then get in contact with the teleneurologist and schedule that call. The patient will be seen. A lot of times they have a family member or a representative with them, and then they will discuss next steps, treatment. And from there, this is my favorite part about the program because a lot of times if patients did not have access to this program, the service, then they would have to be transferred out to another hospital. And we know with rural hospitals, a lot of times, you know, a neurologist is not a specialist that has enough draw where it requires a provider to be scheduled 24/7, 365 days a year. And so this provides the instant access, or almost instant access, mm-hmm. to this provider without having to staff a neurologist all of that time. And so this results in averted transfers. The patient is able to stay in a community that they know, love, and they're familiar with, close to family, close to friends. They're able to do their recovery, their therapy, you know, post-stroke and getting out of that acute situation. And, you know, studies have shown that being around family, being around friends helps the recovery process immensely. Mm-hmm. And so not only are we working with the stroke, but we're allowing this whole process of care to take place in one location. And I love that because that also helps with family travel. They don't have to travel 50 plus miles to, you know, go be with their family member. They're able to stay in their community at their home. And so all around, there are just a number of benefits. And I think that is very, very telling really for the whole of telehealth, that it does provide all of these great outcomes. And so it's been wonderful just seeing how it's unfolded like that.
And as somebody who recently had to travel states because of a family member's medical emergency, I can speak from experience how trying that experience is, not just on the person receiving the care, but on their support system as well. Because it's hard to have to leave your community of origin, where all your support systems, your family, your friends, your third place, you know, like your church, whatever sort of community you have there. And some people have to do that to get medical care. But if we can innovate with these hub and spoke models like Crossroads, where we have the one provider able to cover places away from their own community, I think that's great. I think that's such a good way to help folks stay in their community and recover more quickly.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So when we're looking at these emerging healthcare technologies, things like telehealth, digital health, all that good stuff, I feel a lot of the focus does get put on patient care in the way that we see it in like a doctor's office, and not necessarily the acute care and things like stroke and other neurological sort of things like you mentioned. Why is it so important to sort of consider those factors when we're talking about expansions of telehealth? Why is it important to be cognizant of their more acute care aspects?
Oh my goodness, because there is so much opportunity for further growth within the telehealth realm. Telehealth began really as that understanding of like, this is meant to serve as an expansion to primary care, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what our school-based telehealth system was. It was primary care with a little bit of behavioral care as well in some of the schools.
Right.
But there is so much opportunity for growth and expansion. Not only does this provide the opportunity for service line growth for hospitals, but also if you have a specialist that practices, you know, as one physician or two physicians in an office, this is also a service line expansion for them. And so it can allow them to expand their patient base. It allows for patients, you know, in non-emergent situations as well, to be able to have access to, you know, a neurologist or a cardiologist, or, you know, you can insert really any specialist there. A lot of times I find that, especially with follow-up, if they need to see the neurologist, the cardiologist, an oncologist, right? And it's not an imperative in-office appointment, that's a fantastic use of this. But with Crossroads, it's fantastic. We're able to use this right there in the emergency room. And you know, this, I mean, it could really be used for a number of things emergently. You know, if you have an individual with diabetes that comes in and they're in the middle of, you know, diabetic ketoacidosis, they can have a consultation right there in the emergency room and have next steps forward. And so there are just a lot of opportunities in this realm because, Like I said, a lot of times hospitals may not have the specialist that you need at that moment. And so that time spent traveling, transferring the patient, that's all crucial to a patient's recovery and their overall health. And so if we're able to do this and able to reduce that and improve their chances of recovery, then it is 100% worth the effort and the time as well.
Right. And I do think that we do fall into kind of the fallacy with telehealth sometimes, where it's an all or nothing shot, where we either have to do everything in person or everything via telehealth and there's no in between. But you mentioned how follow-ups are great examples of where telehealth can really shine because you don't necessarily have to see the patient in person. And I think that you really hit the nail on the head with that because not every sort of care in a hospital can be delivered through telehealth. Like I can't do an MRI at home or something like that. But I feel like a lot of what is done in hospitals and specifically emergency rooms, like with Crossroads, a lot of that can be done with the assistance of telehealth with professionals who are practicing in different locations because particularly with those rural hospitals, you're not going to have a full staff. You're not going to have neurological experts. You're maybe not going to have a lot of different specialists that you need. And rather than transferring our patients 100, 200 miles, using this telehealth system is a really great compromise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was definitely an initial fear when telehealth first started making its appearance on the landscape. I think it was feared that it would be a replacement.
Right.
But we understand working in telehealth, we understand the fact that it's not possible for telehealth to become a full replacement, right? And so it really does work. When it's done correctly, it works synergistically with in-person care. And I think that that is hopefully what this program is showing. All of our partners, they understand that and they appreciate it, and they have really done a fantastic job working that into their workflow at the hospitals. It's my hope, I suppose whoever hears this and listens to this, I hope that they come away with the understanding that it's a good partnership between the two realms.
Right. And even telehealth advocates like myself and you, I presume,
Yes.
don't go around saying telehealth is the be all end all for everything in the medical profession. Like it's a panacea, it'll fix the world. It's not.
No.
It's a great tool for access in a lot of cases. I love it for access. It's a great tool for minimizing effort. It's a great tool for patients being able to see their providers at home, particularly for specialties like behavioral health. But there are some things that are always going to need to get done in person until we get like our AI future technology where you can like astral project into people's homes or whatever. But
Oh
outside
my
the realm of
goodness.
sci-fi, outside that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness. I wonder. I often wonder what that's going to look like in the future with telehealth and appointments and everything along those lines. But I suppose we can only imagine what it's going to be like. New things are coming out all the time, and one of the newer realms of telehealth includes something along the lines of teledental, where they'll take the technology with a hygienist to schools. They're able to do either store and forward or live in synchronous appointments with the dentist back at the office. And so I think as telehealth technology continues to evolve, that's going to open the door for more specialties to continue coming on board and expanding how they deliver their care.
Right. And while we're talking about the future, so looking at this Crossroads program more conceptually from a higher level, do you think that there are, and you mentioned diabetes care earlier, but do you think that there are other conditions that this sort of hub and spoke model would lend itself really well to?
Oh my goodness.
I know it's a big question.
It is a big question, but I think it's an important question
Right.
because we're not just stuck into what we already work with. we have the opportunity for growth. There are a lot of organizations that have also worked with telehealth in ambulances and, you know, delivery of the patient's vitals through telehealth technology. And so the emergency room is more prepared for when that patient arrives. I could see that, of course, being very, very useful in our rural areas. You know, I've mentioned cardiology. I think it would be very helpful in cardiology, especially follow-up appointments. You know, we did talk about the diabetes care as well. There are other opportunities for expansion. And then sometimes I think we don't think about these areas like OBGYN, prenatal care. And you know, of course, that doesn't allow for, you know, an ultrasound, that doesn't allow for, you know, fetal heart rate monitoring, because a lot of times that's done in office, right? But if it's just a quick conversation, you have a quick question that you want to have a 25, 30 minute appointment, you know, with your provider for, it would also be wonderful to see the expansion of telelactation consultation. There are so many challenges that come up when trying to breastfeed. And so to be able to be connected with a professional that can walk you through those steps, that's not necessarily something that you have to be in person for. So there are opportunities. And I would hope that the specialties available in telehealth would just continue to skyrocket in the near future.
Yeah, that's my hope.
Yeah.
So, speaking of the future a bit more, what does the future of the Crossroads program look like?
Well, you know, as with all grant-funded programs, our funding from the federal government will end here closer to the end of the year at the end of August. So, when we first started the program, one of our biggest areas of focus has been sustainability. Right? So, through this program, we have been able to disseminate funding to our partners as a way to help cover some of these costs, right? Whenever a hospital implements a new program, a new service line, that of course takes, you know, money, right? Everything takes money these days, and the money we have doesn't get us as near as much as what we used to get, unfortunately. But we've been very fortunate to be able to provide funding to our partners every single year of the program. And we have focused on identifying challenges that come up with sustainability during these 4 years. And so I'm very, very proud to say that our partners are very confident that programming will continue after our funding ends, because they have worked so hard to build this into their annual budgets and ensure that this was going to be a sustainable program, even after our time with helping and managing this has come to an end.
And that's always the goal with any grant-funded program, is not to go in, deliver a service, and then leave. It's to go in, teach the community how to deliver that service themselves. So when your funding runs out, the program doesn't go away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if I had it my way, of course I would just continue to work on this program and work with our great partners. And but you know, it is meant to be kind of a pilot in these communities, and then they have the opportunity to really just take it and run with it. And that's what they've done. They've done a fantastic job.
And with a pilot program like this, your greatest hope is to see the kind of success you all have seen in Crossroads. And I think that's very cool.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate to have received the buy-in from the community and to have seen the results that we have seen, you know, and I'm just very grateful to have been able to work on a program like this. It's been a great experience.
I think it's emblematic of the work that you've done that despite the fact that you're no longer going to be sort of there providing the funding, providing the like enforcement, as it were, to keep this program going, that it's going to keep going in these communities and that folks are going to continue to benefit from the telestroke work that you've done and the program that you've left there. I think that's got to be a good feeling.
It is, you know, behind this grant, it is a ton of work and a ton of support. You know, not only do I serve as the director, but of course, on my team as well is our amazing program coordinator, Micah Casahoon, and he does a fantastic job. We have, We've worked together on this program for a number of years now. And one of the things that we have really wanted to leave behind as the, I guess, for lack of a better term with this, the legacy of this program is not only do we want the telestroke portion to be remembered, right, and continue to operate, but something that we started about 2 years ago really is focusing on prevention and lifestyle medicine. And so we've gone through and we've made these resources kind of a little resource library for our partners, and we've sent them to them, and they've been very well received by the patients, providers, by the administration as well. And the ultimate goal with that is, we were having a brainstorming session. I love those brainstorming sessions where you just get to sit down and you just talk and you're like, what do we want this program to be remembered for? And what else can we do to continue its growth and its positive impact in these communities? And we were like, well, what happens after the patient recovers from the stroke? It's like, well, maybe we could talk more about prevention with this, right? Because we had found all of our partners that we were going to be able to financially support. We still had 2 years left in the program, and we were thinking, well, we can't just sit here for 2 years and not try to do anything new or not contribute additionally to the growth of this program. And so we thought, well, maybe this could be a situation where, the provider comes in and says, we are so glad that we were able to have this program available for you and have these consultations available for you. Let's talk about the next steps. What are we going to do to make sure that you don't come back here for the same thing? So that has been very just inspirational. Just diving into the world of lifestyle medicine prevention and being able to work with the American College of Lifestyle Medicine to get my certification in that. And it's just opened up in my eyes a whole new world of opportunity for telehealth as well. We could expand this into preventive care counseling and lifestyle management and all these things to help ensure that the health of our patients is, the main focus. And we want to make sure that as patients are on the road to recovery, not only are we focusing on the chronic condition that they've been dealing with, but we look at how do we prevent future episodes. So we've really enjoyed making this a part of the Crossroads program as well.
No, that's such a good legacy to leave behind. Not just this is how we treat the problem, but this is how we prevent it in the future, which should always be the goal. So, could you expand a little bit more on what you mean when you talk about lifestyle medicine?
Yeah, absolutely. So lifestyle medicine is still relatively new in practice in traditional medicine, right? And what it's basically saying is that by making strategic choices within our own lifestyle, we do have so much more control over the development of chronic diseases and even our health outcomes with diseases that we already have. And as a nation, I don't think it's any surprise that we are, one of the nations in the world that spends the most money on healthcare, and yet unfortunately we have some of the worst health outcomes. And I read about that, and our spending on healthcare is more than the size of the economies of some small countries, and I think about that and I say, well, what is happening then? If we are pouring these resources in, why are we not receiving those outcomes that we expect? And I think it comes down to the fact that in some ways we have become so discouraged as patients, thinking that our health future is written in stone. But yet we know through seeing inspirational stories, people who have turned their lives around through changes in diet, inclusion of exercise, that change is possible, prevention is possible, and the improvement of our outcomes is possible. So the practice of lifestyle medicine is built on six different pillars. We look at nutrition, physical activity, restorative sleep, which none of us get, right? We all need more of
Oh, for sure.
that. Having a strong social network around you, avoiding risky substances, and being sure to reduce stress. And studies have shown that when we incorporate changes from all of those pillars, that our health outcomes are better, and that there's an improved return on investment than with just traditional health care, right? It's kind of like that point that we made earlier, that telehealth is not here to replace traditional health care. And
Right.
just the same way, lifestyle medicine is not here to replace all of traditional medicine, but it is a wonderful partner. And if we work with patients to change lifestyle and make incremental changes, it is worth all the effort because the outcomes have spoken for themselves. You know, there are a number of, I like to call the founding fathers of lifestyle medicine, T. Colin Campbell to Caldwell Esselstyn, who operated out of the Cleveland Clinic. Just reading on his cases that he's worked with, switching patients to a mostly plant-based diet and completely reversing some of the worst cases of heart disease that he had ever seen. You know, so it is available to be a partner to traditional healthcare, and I think that that's going to become much more popular in the future as we look for ways to improve patients' quality of life and improve their long-term outcomes as well.
Yeah, because I know that a lot of the maxim in public health is older, poorer, sicker, because that's what we're seeing in our overall population. And I do like that you don't say that again, that this is like the panacea, this is the key, this will fix it. But that this can be a useful partner to existing medical practices. And when we talk about this, when we talk about social determinants of health, I think it's really important to just keep in mind that there's not one way to improve someone's health outcomes. There's a lot of ways, and the best way to make someone or make a community or make our whole country healthier is by considering all of these different factors together, not just one specific one.
Absolutely. When we all work together, it makes for a perfect situation. So I think the opportunity's there, and I think we are definitely moving in the right direction.
Yep, I hope we see that seized in every healthcare sector as soon as possible.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Definitely. Well, I tell you what, Danielle, thank you so much for having me on the call today and the podcast, and I just really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I always like chatting with folks about what they do in telehealth and healthcare in general. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you for listening to A Virtual View. You can find more information about today's episode in the show notes below. If you would like to support our podcast, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Do you have any questions or topics you'd like us to discuss? If so, contact us at info@umtrc.org or through the form found in the show notes. Also, we'd like to give a special thanks to our editor, Tristan Yoder. Finally, a special thanks to the Health Resources and Service Administration, also known as HRSA. Our podcast series, A Virtual View, is sponsored in part by HRSA's Telehealth Resource Center program, which is under HRSA's Office of the Administrator and the Office for the Advancement of Telehealth. The content and conclusions of this podcast are those of the UMTRC and should not be construed as the official policy of or the position of, nor should any endorsements be inferred by HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government. Thanks for listening and have a great day.